Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business, where we talk about the business of the game of football. And as always, with me is Neil Stratton of Inside the League. Neil, how's it going this morning?
It's going great, Justin. Good morning. Glad to be here.
So, wanted to jump right into that in regards to something that came out this week was the kind of a new regulation in regards to the AFCA, the American Football Coaches Association, and the NFL regards to allowing five guys, five underclassmen to be able to get height, weight, measured, do the Wunderlich test. That would be potential juniors, so underclassmen that can, during the spring junior day, they'll be able to, check those underclassmen out to try to help, get that evaluation process. Number one, what's your initial thoughts of that? And then we'll kind of drill down into different things here.
Well, I think it's an interesting first step, but I don't know that it necessarily answers, I guess maybe after fashion. Essentially, what I think what it does is it allows NFL teams to evaluate the players that will be underclassmen over a much longer period of time, and that's a benefit. And I think if they allow those players to seek their draft projection early on and receive their projection back early on, I think it can be a benefit. But I don't think they've addressed yet if that's going to be the case or not. I don't, as you know, Justin, you can submit your name immediately following the season. I think after completion of your regular season, so sometime in November, and then it usually takes 2 weeks to 3 weeks to get an evaluation back, and that evaluation is usually good. I'm not sure. I'm not picking on the NFL's review process, but not as complete as it could be if NFL teams were able to evaluate you through the course of the season. So I think in theory, plan that is going to be a step in the right direction, but I think there are a number of unanswered questions before we can really fully decide if it's going to be a big boon for it. I have several of them, and I haven't, in my talks to people in the scouting community, I haven't gotten the answers to them, and maybe they haven't developed these answers yet. Maybe they are still working on them. Maybe they have, and they just haven't widely disseminated how they're going to do the process. But I guess we'll have to wait and see kind of how these things develop. I think at least they're trying to address things. Trying is better than nothing. And I don't think this is something that's necessarily integral to the workings of the league in September and October. I mean, obviously we have a season going. So, I guess I credit them for giving it a shot, and we'll have to wait and see if it actually works out or not.
Well, here's the issues that I see. Number one, and I'm just going to take two schools, Michigan and Michigan State, here where I live. Okay, back when Brady Hoke and Rich Rod, when National came in, they didn't allow those guys to do, height, weight, measure, run the 40, do anything there. And Michigan State has been the same way under Mark D'Antonio in regards to even the seniors, in regards to doing height, weight, measure, wonder, like all that kind of stuff there. When Jim Harbaugh came and took over the Michigan program, he allowed the scouts to come in there and do height, weight, 40, hand, arm, and Wunderlich, but not running the 40 there. But Michigan State still is, under D'Antonio, and still has that same policy in regards to, hey, they're not letting the scouts get their hands on even the senior, prospects there. So my question is if you're going to make this regulation in regards to this agreement with the AFCA, there, and obviously it's still going to be subject to, the individual coaches allowing the scouts to do that. So then so if Jim Harbaugh then allows, okay, hey, we're going to designate these five underclassmen that can be evaluated in the spring, height, weight, measure, there, okay, great. But if D'Antonio still has the same type of mentality of, hey, I'm not letting the scouts come in there at all, they can come watch the film and they can estimate what their height weight is and their 40, but I'm not letting them touch my guys. So that's the same case there. So then Michigan State, they can designate all they want, but the scouts aren't going to be getting a true, you know, evaluation to be able to, you know, get in there and different things like that. And we can all, you know, surmise height, weight, and speed and different things like that. But until you get a true measure and saying, hey, this guy is 6'1", not 6'3", you know, and then you start really getting, you know, true, okay, hey, you know, putting different things, you know, together there. So I think that's number one is a big question mark so, you know, it's a nice PR move, a nice spin, but until coaches start allowing the scouts to come in and do their jobs in the springs, it really has no impact, you know, in the fall, you know, when the players are able to then make a decision, hey, if they're going to come out or not there. You know, some other questions that I know you had posed here, and we'll kind of run through them. You know, will the name of the players designated as underclassmen to scout be made public? When will the names be submitted to the NFL teams? Will NFL teams expand their scouting departments? And will their deadline for the players to declare for the draft be, you know, extended? And I think that's a bigger question there, and that's something that you know, Nick Saban had kind of really pushed, you know, for, you know, theirs because of the playoffs and the, you know, the bowl games, and then these guys have to make a decision there. Do you think, and when you're in discussions, you know, here this week, do we think we'll see a true underclassmen combine? What have the scouts that you've spoken with, what have they said, and kind of what's your feelings on some of these questions that you kind of raised?
Well, regarding a combine, I thought that was kind of what Saban and Meyer were seeking and were kind of driving for, and there has been no mention of that. And that may be too much of a – that may be too much for a first step. I guess they're going to try to take measured steps and hope that this gets them out of Dutch with Urban and Meyer and – the handful of coaches that are really pushing for this, Bielema and what have you. The question that you had is another big one. And I think there's a perception out there that everyone gets access to all the teams and all the NFL teams can kind of do whatever they want. That's not true at all. And you gave two good examples there. I don't know if the AFC will really be able to enforce this and say, hey, look, guys, you're going to have to give up access. And if a coach doesn't, what's the AFC going to do? Pull their ability to attend the AFCA clinic in January? I mean, they don't have a lot of teeth there, and it's doubtful that even if they did have teeth, they would really try to enforce this. I mean, at the end of the day, all they're trying to do is keep the major schools from losing their kind of fringe draft-eligible players, their guys that are going to be college, you know, priority free agents rather than first and second rounders, so that, you know, Nick Saban and Urban Meyer can go out and recruit those positions, not have to recruit those positions because those guys will come back. I don't know how much they're willing to bleed to keep the biggest of the Power Five schools happy. And so until we see this in effect and see how it takes place, I don't know. There's still a lot of questions to answer. I know it's going to be if the names are made public, it will be a bonanza for the NFL draft crowd, which will be able to kind of – we'll have a new class, I guess you'd say, of players that are – everyone kind of knows our future NFL types, but this will kind of give a player in the imprimatur of, I guess, legitimacy and maybe a bit of status. And I hope that as this takes place, schools will get a little more serious about agent education and education in the NFL draft process, because as you know, Justin, whenever any kind of status like this is conferred on a player, he automatically thinks he's got one foot in the NFL, and that's not necessarily a responsible position to take, and it comes with a lot of strings. You know, immediately he's going to be recruited by agents far more heavily than he would be otherwise, and that will include his parents and all the people around him. The whole process is going to start a lot earlier. And most schools are not very progressive when it comes to these matters and these issues, and would rather try to ignore them and hope they go away. We know how successful that is, especially how successful it's been with some of the schools that have had to face suspensions and what have you. So this has the potential to have tremendous impact among the bigger schools with the more talent-laden rosters. And so I'm sure it's something that we'll be talking about as we go forward, because there are so many things to explore here and so many things to kind of walk through and figure out how it'll work in practice. I think it's a good step in the right direction, but there's a lot more. We've got a long way to go.
Well, I think here's one last subject I think we need to talk about in regards to this, and it's the near and dear to both of our hearts because we've been involved with them, and that's the All-Star Games. Really, you know, 5 years ago when the NFLPA started their own All-Star Game and they allowed juniors in there, and that was kind of, oh, hey, we're going to allow juniors and different things like that, the NFL then said, okay, well, we're not sending any scouts, and no scouts came to that first NFLPA game. How, you know, then the Senior Bowl was able to kind of get a loophole of, okay, hey, if the player was a fourth-year junior who had graduated, then he was eligible for the senior, you know, for the Senior Bowl.
Right.
Now, with this being stated, now do we see All-Star games having juniors being able to attend, you know, true All-Star games? So, hey, if you're a junior and you declare early, you can go to the East West Shrine Game, the NFLPA game, and the Senior Bowl if you're one of these five players. You know, I think that's a bigger question. It could be potential a bigger impact, you know, because we saw a guy like Eric Fisher go from a late first, early second to the number one overall pick, you know, a couple of years ago. And I know I use that example at nauseam, but that's really, you know, we've seen that. And so then now will they allow these quasi, you know, different category of player into an All-Star game? Any thought on that? Any you know, news and your thoughts on the All-Star game process then?
There's just so many, you know, there's just so many questions that come with this. And the All-Star game is another important facet of it. I think, probably as you see the bifurcation of college football from the Power Fives and the non-Power Fives, we're moving more and more towards the NFL-ication, I guess, of college football. And so I think that that's reasonable to expect that at some point there will be juniors playing this game in All-Star games. How will that work and what will that look like is certainly up in the air for now. You know, you mentioned the NFLPA. The NFLPA kind of thought they were – I guess the NFLPA was a little bigger than its britches and thought it had a little more influence than they thought they could. I think they thought they could kind of reroute, the flow of things on their own, and they were shown that that would not be the case. But now, because the NFL is trying to take baby steps in this process and kind of walk with the NCAA and walk with the AFCA to bring coaches along and try to be less obtrusive, then – there's a very good chance that in 4 or 5 years we could be seeing juniors playing in All-Star games. Maybe even playing, you know, if these guys, maybe they move the deadline back from February to January, they declare those five players, and maybe they allow those five players to go off and play in the Senior Bowl a year before they're, you know, draft eligible. I mean, I guess anything is possible at this point. The question is, how influential will the Meyer/Saban/Bielema group be in making more changes and more concessions from the pros and what have you? I don't know. This is very uncharted territory, and I didn't think we'd ever see it come to this, but now here we are.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously the junior rule is an NFL rule in regards to with the underclassmen that, you know, the scouts can't get their hands on them until the combine, until after, you know, that January deadline has passed, you know, there. So that's, I think, when you're, you know, kind of, okay, treading on that. I think it'd be a good thing to, hey, if you said, okay, hey, you know, if you declare – you can go into an all-star game, because I've never understood why. Okay, he's no longer in college football, but he can't be in an all-star game.
Yeah.
I thought, and then when the Senior Bowl, who is partners with the NFL, the NFL, when they started, oh well, hey, this is how we're gonna allow it to benefit the Senior Bowl, but it didn't benefit the Shrine Game, the NFLPA game, or any other all-star games, there. So I thought that was a little, hey, we're gonna find a loophole there that, and credit to Phil Savage on doing it, because he was smart enough to kind of, figure the loophole there and different things there. I think, hey, now you're going to do this. If a guy declares, let him be in one of these all-star games. Now, hey, the all-star games recruit just as much as agents do. So, that was the whole thing. Oh, we're not going to let – we don't want the all-star games to recruit these guys to let to come out early to play in one of their games. Who cares? It's like, if the kid's going to come out, he's going to come out. It doesn't matter if he's going to go. He's going to go to Orlando, for a week. I think that's really, backwards thinking on the NFL's part there. So I think it's a big, topic. It was a big kind of, splashing news there. I mean, we had talked about, potentially something coming, but it wasn't anything that was, to this level or how this was structured. It's interesting. Obviously, it starts next year. It doesn't have anything to do with any of these this year's draft class or this year's underclassmen. It would be the guys that are – it would be like the Lamar Jacksons of the world. He's not draft eligible, and that he would be in this kind of, Louisville could say, he's going to be a guy who's going to come out, so you should start evaluating him there.
Right.
On to – for his agent news, one thing that you broke on Inside the League yesterday, I believe, was Goline, which is a sports agency. They hired ex-Lions executive Cedric Saunders there. No, and you had talked about this, but let's kind of, get a little bit deeper there. What do you think he brings to goal line, and do you think, as far as this is something that agencies, bigger agencies, mid-sized agencies will bring in, there, and why did this happen?
Well, I think, number one, everyone's looking for an edge, and in the era of the 1.5% agent fee, you've got to have something that moves the needle for you and gives players a reason to want to go with your firm, because now that everyone's essentially going to be paid the same and there's a lot less margin, regarding changing your fees. I think Saunders, I guess it kind of depends on how Goline uses Saunders. If they use him as part of the recruiting process, if they allow him to come in and talk to kids, which I presume they will, that really is a big move for them. As you know, Justin, making the initial contact with a player is all well and good, and I think agencies do a pretty good job of establishing first contact, but once you get into the meat of the season where we are right now, most players' next question to kind of call the herd is, hey, tell me what scouts see in me, what are my weaknesses, what I need to work on, those kinds of things. A Cedric Saunders can come on and say, this is what the teams tell me, here's what I see. Even though Saunders wasn't, a director of college scouting or a director of player personnel per se, he does have the NFL brand on him, and that reason he has a certain amount of legitimacy and credibility that others might not have, even seasoned agents that have been around for a long time. That's number one. Number two, I think what he brings to goal line is one more network connector for the coaches out there that are looking for agents. Right now, the hottest growth business in this area is coaches, because there's still a number of coaches who don't have representation. There's a pipeline coming up of new coaches that could be hot. And right now the arc from just got hired in the NFL as an assistant coach to next hot name on the head coaching, list is very short. We're seeing more and more coaches that have been around for a long time that are getting big jobs and big contracts. And so you could work with a coach, he gets hot and flashes into something special, and wham, he's a big name pretty quickly. So I think goal line is trying to bring Saunders in to kind of help them expand that base and try to find the next young rising star, and it gives them one more person who can go to bat for him. And they can identify just a couple more Mike Tomlins, to give one example of a coach that they represent, then it paid off for them in spades. And so I think that's kind of what they get. Number one, they get one more guy who just kind of helps them put them forward as far as a big-time agency that has NFL types surrounding it, and it also allows them to find those rising stars and perhaps have one more person that can swing the pendulum to them when it comes to signing those young rising stars. So I think it's a good move for them, and I think it's something that more and more we're going to see in agencies.
You know, definitely, and then something that you've done with inside the league in regards to really placing ex-scouts with agencies, really in this, kind of the scouting academy is what you're calling it there. And have you seen that to be successful? And in regards to these ex-scouts or a guy like, you know, Cedric Saunders, do you think these guys are transitioning then out of the NFL business, or is it just a kind of a short-term thing like we saw Mike Tannenbaum kind of do with Priority Sports, and then bang, he was a year in kind of the agent business with the coaches, and then, you know, got an opportunity to go back with the Dolphins, and now is the Dolphins general manager or he's the president there of the Dolphins. I mean, what kind of feedback have you got in regards to with the scouting academy, and then kind of on a future standpoint there?
Well, I think that there was a time when someone got out of the league, a scout, an executive, and they kind of wanted to stay away from the agent side because maybe that would stain them a bit. They're kind of recasting themselves. They're going over to the dark side, whatever. I think that's going away. And one reason for that is because it's hard out there. I mean, I've talked to a number of former scouts who get out and think they'll go interview somewhere else and get right back in. And that doesn't happen. And sometimes they're out there for a year, 2 years, 3 years, maybe even more. And this is one more way to make a little bit of money, but also kind of keep their evaluation tools solid and sharp. And I think, so for that reason, I think it's symbiotic and it can benefit both sides. It's tough out there, you know, when you're not employed and you're maybe in your late 40s or your early 50s, and you're kind of in that area where you're not young and cheap anymore and maybe a little overqualified for what for the jobs that are out there. And so these scouts are trying to explore every option. I mean, as I think anyone that follows us on Twitter knows, we've already linked up 5 former scouts with agencies in the last month, and I'm hoping to make it 6 today. So that's becoming more and more popular. We're also exploring a relationship with the Scouting Academy, which basically trains young scouts and has a partnership with the Senior Bowl. We're trying to we're exploring how we're going to do this, but we're going to try to pair up some of their top students with some agencies, and again allow those agencies to take part in this and maybe find some players that are a little off the radar, a little bit rising, and maybe people don't know about as much. And you know, and I think that's going to be really popular as well. So that the wall between scout and agent is really falling, and I think that's probably a good thing. It's certainly something that I know agencies can benefit from, and even scouts to some degree. So you know, as that develops, I think that's going to become a bigger, more popular move. And you alluded to the fact that Mike Tannenbaum did that briefly with Priority Sports and hop right back into the league. So if it doesn't damage scouts and doesn't harm their name or their reputation, I don't know why they wouldn't consider it anyway.
Yeah, you know, definitely. There, you know, like I said, I think, you know, like you had mentioned, it's really trying to keep that network and keep those conversations, those relationships, you know, going. Because whether you're in the agent business or the scouting community, that's kind of the lifeblood of kind of your business is kind of your relationships and people who you know or can get to know or get to have a stronger relationship with there. So kind of some thumbs up, thumbs down with some different news that's going around the NFL. Josh Gordon, an excellent receiver there with the Cleveland Browns, has decided to enter a rehab facility, put his NFL kind of career on hold, which it's been on hold for a long time there. So thumbs up, thumbs down. Neil, do you think Josh Gordon will have another 1,000-yard season?
Well, you know, he's still only 25. But, boy, there have been a whole lot more – stops and starts when it comes to his career over the last 3 years. And obviously when he came into the league, there were already questions about it. I think he does. I'm hopeful that he does, but it won't be with the Cleveland Browns. It seems to be pretty much agreed upon that he's done in Cleveland, and maybe he needs to get a new start somewhere else. I admire him for essentially putting the 2016 season on ice and getting the help that he needs. And I think that there's still a chance that he can recapture it, but he's going to have to put his demons behind him, and who knows how long that's going to take.
Yeah, I mean, I think the standpoint, I would go thumbs down on that. I think, you know, he's had enough history, and really when you see that, unfortunately, with a talented guy like that, it's hard to break away from that pass. So I hope the best for him, and I hope he does have a 1,000-yard season. But if I was putting some money down in Vegas, I would say thumbs down on that. Another, drug-related incident, Randy Gregory, a guy who was a talented pass rusher coming out of Nebraska, and his draft stock dropped because of, some drug allegations and different things like that then obviously came to fruition. Do you think, thumbs up, thumbs down, Randy Gregory will have a 10-sack season ever?
I don't think he will. I'm not as bullish on Gregory as I am on Gordon. Gregory was, my information was that even when he was touring the league, during top 30 visits in March and April, leading up to the draft, the year he was selected, he was still actively using drugs, even when he was visiting teams. My impression is that this is something that's going to be really hard for him to shake. And I hope that changes. Obviously, we'll root for all the players and hope they have plenty of opportunities. But he hasn't had that success yet that Gordon has. And it may be hard to start the engine given that he's just really struggling so much and hasn't had that learning curve yet, really hasn't figured out what it takes to be successful in the NFL. He doesn't have anything to kind of fall back on. And it's going to be hard to really start that momentum, to my idea at least, this late in his career. And again, I realize he's just in his second year, but we're talking about year one, year two are essentially gone, and he really hasn't played much football. And so he'll be going into year three next year, and he might be able to get a little bit of time in at the end of this year, but wow, the sand is really zooming through the hourglass, if you ask me right now. My guess is that he never does fulfill the potential that he had going into his junior year at Nebraska.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So Les Miles was fired this past week, the head coach, former head coach at LSU. Do we think he'll be a head coach again by the 2018 season? He does have 6 years left on his contract and gets about $1.5 million in regards to per year there, and will be 63 in November. Do you think, he'll be a head coach ever again, and definitely by the 2018 season?
I think he gets one more shot. Obviously, LSU was it didn't end well there, and he had some consistent problems with his offense. But Les Miles can bring talent in, and he's a flashy guy, an interesting guy, a colorful guy, and I think he doesn't have the baggage that, say, Art Briles has. So I think that he gets one more crack at it. Where that is, impossible to say. I mean, it kind of depends on how bored he gets and what kind of opportunity he's willing to settle for. But I think there's a good chance that he winds up coaching again. It's just I don't think it happens in 17, but I think it could happen by the 18 season. There are always jobs out there, and everyone's always looking for someone who's got a winning record and a record of success.
Yeah, and I think the standpoint there is something you kind of touched on. Number one, he's a heck of a recruiter. Always had LSU top there. And number two, he ran a clean program. There wasn't any scandals or anything like that there. So I think that's a huge thing for presidents that will look in there. So I think he could potentially be a head coach by as soon as next year, if the right opportunity kind of pops open there for him. So with about 30 seconds to go here, Neil, anything that you wanted to mention in regards to going on in ITL this week?
Well, we're obviously in the meat of the season. We're still working to pair agents with scouts, and we started a new thing called a two-minute drill that it's on bumpers. It's a two-minute audio presentation that just kind of covers the NFL draft process. We're trying to reach out to parents of players to use that to kind of get educated and coached up on the process. Before you know it, this season will be over, and it'll be decision time for a lot of people. And so we're hoping that's kind of the next thing that can be helpful to parents, especially of draft prospects.
And where's that again, Neil?
That's on that. We'll have that on our we'll be posting that on our Twitter, and it's through bumpers. It's just a new audio editing function that it's kind of new to the industry, and we've been using it on an experimental basis. So we're going to kind of see how that develops there as well.
Awesome. Well, Neil, you have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Justin.